Welcome to Holy Ghosting, a podcast about deconstruction with your middle-aged mom friends. I'm Lindsay, and I had sex before marriage, therefore I was a chewed up, used old piece of gum when I got married.
And I'm Meg, and I did not touch or see or feel a penis until my wedding night, and then it was full P&V right then and there.
God, I hate that story.
As good Lord intended it.
Speaking of purity horror stories, oh my God. Okay, I'm Sarai, and I stayed a virgin until I got married against my wishes. I guess I was like an incel kind of, but it was voluntary. So I guess, I don't know, man. Growing up, Christian was fucking weird, okay? That's all I have to say. That's just, I can't even do a good intro today. Just, it's fucking weird. It was a weird thing.
And today on Holy Ghosting is Tales from the Purity Culture Crypt.
We're feeling spooky and creepy, and we are talking about, I think, the darkest, weirdest, worstest parts of evangelicalism, which is purity culture. And we asked our listeners and our fans on the internet to submit some stories. So we have heard from a lot of people because we were all scarred by purity culture. Mm-hmm. Am I right? Raise a hand purity culture fucked you up.
Everybody, hands up. Listeners, hands up.
I see that hand.
It's all of us.
So many hands.
And probably a bunch of you listening. So good job, everybody.
And as usual, we try to deal with things in a little bit of humor, but also a lot of honesty and from a place of wanting to heal and connect with others who have been through similar things. Just know going into this episode, there will be some heavy topics. I'm just giving some trigger warnings. We will definitely be talking about a lot of sex, a lot of body parts. All of those things are going to be mentioned, but also assault and rape will be talked about as well. So we will try to give some specifics. There's one specific story that we're sharing that we'll give a trigger warning before that story. But for the most part, we'll mostly just be talking a lot about sex and all the sex we were not having. So
and all the shame we felt around it. Mm. And even the thoughts that we had were terrible. And we weren't allowed to lust in our hearts.
No, and the lifelong ramifications of growing up in a very oppressive, forcefully repressive environment. You know, just still untangling those knots. No problem. We're all good.
And we will be untangling it forever, which is why we joke that we could do multiple seasons on purity culture. We have done episodes on purity culture. Specifically, one of our favorites is Dr. Laura Anderson. That episode was so dang helpful. We
life-changing.
Adore her. And if you haven't listened to that episode, please go back and listen to it. She just has so much goodness to say. And so this is just going to be the three of us today. We are not coming at this from a therapist perspective. We are coming at it from like our perspective and how it was to live as young women in evangelical spaces that during the height of the purity culture craze, specifically True Love Waits.
TLW, bitches. Yes.
So many good memories.
Yeah. So I, for those who may not know, True Love Waits was a movement. I should have done my research as to when it started, but frankly, I just didn't even want to give them the Google clicks. I don't care when they started. I'm not going to give you the history of them. What it was is basically took over youth groups nationwide, and people were pledging their virginity, they were going to save themselves. There were pledge cards, there were purity rings, there were conferences. There was, someone on our TikTok said they were in a True Love Waits musical.
What?
Oh,
that's awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
I really want to get a link to that.
I need to see it. Like somebody said.
I asked her, and she was like, I don't think it. I'm sure she burned it. You know, we got to find it. If we can find it on YouTube somewhere. I didn't know. I was never taken to a True Love Waits musical, and nor was I in one. Sadly, I really feel like that's one part of fundamentalism I missed out on. So
I feel like you and Sarai would have really just like knocked that out of the park. Standing obviously. Ovations every night.
Wait, hold on. Since Sarai is a musical genius, I just want to know if you were to write a True Love Waits musical right now. I just need to know what would your song be? Like, how would you sing about the P and the V? Like, let me know.
Oh, I'd start it like, I don't want it. I don't want it, want it. I don't want it, want your P and my V for now.
For now.
And then you put a ring on it. I think this is a pop culture thing. Like, you could literally and then you got to put a ring on it. And
if you want to have sex, put a ring on it.
That's right.
Yeah. If the pee's gonna be, put a ring on it.
Oh my god. Yeah, okay. Yes. So a penis ring? No, that's not what we mean. Okay, cool.
Okay, so we're gonna be writing this musical. If you'd like to participate or be part of our performance, you just let us know. We're taking applications now. Send us all your lyric ideas, because frankly, if we can't laugh about this shit, like, I might cry. Like, I just might start crying.
Because I am gonna write a purity culture musical. Go on. I'm going to. I just decided because I feel like you do need it, Meg. I think it is something cathartic.
Yeah.
We could do interpretive dance to it.
Yes. And I need to sing those ballads. I need to sing them at the top of my lungs, but not the True Live Waits version. I want the purity culture horror musical that just takes all this anguish that we have and makes it absolutely hilarious, because that's the place I'm at. I just need to giggle a little about the shit that we endured, because if not, it's tragic. It's horrible. Like, my sexual repression has overwhelmed me this last year, just realizing how deep it has been and how overwhelmingly powerful it has been in my life. And I've been married 23 years. Like, I should not have sexual hangups. Like, really. And this is the shit that's so deep, because it, like Dr. Laura said, it happened to us during that time of our adolescence where we were supposed to be learning how to turn that dial up and down. And we just shut it down.
Yeah.
We're so good at it, you guys. We're
really good at it.
I got so many awards and medals.
Awards?
What and awards? Trophies. Like, on my wedding day, all people talked about was our virginity. All that was celebrated was our virginity. It's
literally so embarrassing that that's the thing that people want to fucking talk about when 20-year-olds
get married. I felt like they should be giving me trophies and putting gold medals around my neck, and that I was being praised and glorified for having never seen or touched a peen. Ever. Yep.
They're like, you're really in for it tonight,
Maggie. The scariest thing. Yes. Yeah, and they're like, you guys are going to get it on. That's the other weird thing about it is, I'm supposed to be a pure, virgin. I mean, I don't know what other words to use. Just a pure, straight virgin. Never seen or touched. Never had a lustful thought. Never experienced, anything. And then on my wedding night, it's put a ring on it and that's it. No one gives you information. No one helps you be prepared. I wasn't on birth control. I didn't understand about basic reproductive shit. It just kind of came all at me hard. But hey, we don't have to just hear about my trauma. Oh my God,
that's what she said. Dang, Meg, what you just said was so good. I'd like to just revisit. It came at me really hard on your wedding night. Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry.
It's true. And as all my friends know, the sexual innuendos come out of my mouth without me even knowing. So you're welcome.
Thank you.
Some of that is because I think we were so green, we didn't even know. It's a little Tobias, right? All the things that he says.
I'm going to need to put a tape recorder on me. And
that's a good idea.
Yes. Well, what I want to know specifically is, did either of you, Meg or Sarai, have a purity ring? And if so, do you remember when you got it? Can you tell me about your purity? What did it look like? How long did you wear it for? Did you wear yours till your wedding day?
Yeah. I had two purity rings.
Two? Because you were that pure.
So pure.
The purest.
I had one that came, I believe that it was a ring from my grandmother. It was just a simple silver band. My mom gave it to me as kind of an early promise to myself. I think it was a really beautiful thing. It was not about True Love Waits. It was about not having sex because, of course. But it was more about honoring, being married to myself was kind of the idea. It wasn't about being married to Jesus. It was more just this, wearing it on my – I wore it on my wedding ring, on my left hand. And it was just a placeholder that said, I'm not available, I feel like, is kind of what it was. It was more I don't need to be owned.
Oh, sorry.
You know?
Yeah.
But for me, I took it really seriously. Like I think it was in that like 12, 13 kind of time, maybe when I started to talk about boys that were cute or like people that I liked, where like you like them so much that you can't not say something about it. And that probably scared my mom. Yeah, I don't remember a ton of specifics around like what it all was. And it might have even be not have been a thing with my mom. It might have just been a thing that she gave to me. And then I kind of created some lore around it and like made it a symbol of something. But then when the True Love Waits stuff started, I got a ring from the Disciple Shop, our local Christian bookstore. It was really uncomfortable because it was doves, and the doves were like inset. And so they were sharp. They were like pointy edges on these doves, like
symbolic. Like remember the dove? I remember these.
Yeah, it's symbolic, but like it was like,
because I feel like if I took it off, there'd be like little imprints of doves on my hand. I'm right, like, bring me back, because I forgot about
it. Held this it was a metal too that was like hard and like, I don't know. There was something about it that was I think it turned my finger green. It wasn't like good metal.
No, it wasn't. It was like plated. Yeah, no. I mean
That one was full on purity, True Love Waits. I had a boyfriend at the time. It was like, I made a declaration to him about it. It was like very much like, this is a stance that I am taking. You will not see, touch, be anywhere near sexual parts of me. The end.
Mm. Well.
So thanks. Fun stuff.
I love that little ring. Yeah.
It's a great ring. I think it's like where Machine Gun Kelly got the idea to put claws on the inside of Megan, whatever her face's name is, with their engagement ring. It's like, so it will be painful to take off. And I feel like that's the same idea. It's like these purity rings kind of stood in for like a chastity belt, but like also was a little bit of a torture device, like just so we could experience a little more pain in our lives every single day. I also had a ring that my grams got me, and I'm pretty sure that it was just that she wanted to get me a ring, and it was like a cute little aquamarine ring. It was gold, but it was the 90s, so it was kind of like, ew, gold. No one wears gold because it's the 90s, only silver. So I didn't really wear it much, but then I did, like, when I sometimes would go through, like, extra Christian phases, especially like if I had a really exciting experience at summer camp or whatever, and I'd come home and just be on fire for the Lord. And I'm pretty sure that at one of those points, I picked up that ring and started wearing it as a purity ring. But I also didn't wear it all the time. I never have rings on. I just don't like wearing them, I think, and I always lose them. So I'm pretty sure I lost that ring like almost immediately, and I haven't seen it in decades. So I guess I was like okay with losing my purity ring, which wasn't even that. But but not losing my virginity.
Well, you should have had a purity necklace or something. So because clearly the ring did a really good job for Meg. I do find it interesting that looking at other cultures, like the Bible doesn't say a lot about premarital sex. People, there are verses about sexual immorality, which people have taken to mean having whatever sex before marriage. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's interesting because like most major religions do not approve of sex before marriage. So it's not just a Christianity thing, but with like True Love Waits and the purity rings and the conferences, Christians seem to be the only religion that have figured out how to monetize that. Mm. And I find that very interesting that it became this whole thing and we were all buying the jewelry. And like, of course, there was like, it couldn't just be any old ring. You had to like, I mean, it could be, obviously, Sarai, you had one your grandma bought for you, but there were the branded ones. And I think that there were two different companies. There was True Love Waits was the one that we knew. And I can't remember, it was like Silver Ring or there was something, there was another purity culture like ring company or what have you, but definitely at your local Christian bookstore, you could find those. And I also think it's so interesting how it became this weird way for like parents to talk to their children about sex. Like it was such a bizarre, especially for women. I know that there were guys like purity culture left none unscathed. Like, mm-hmm. it was bad for women and it was bad for men. But from my experience, what I know, it was the parents sitting down with girls mostly to give them the ring. There were, I mean, the Jonas Brothers famously wore purity rings. Justin and Britney did for a minute. Like, it was a thing. Like, it was in the culture. It wasn't just a fringe thing. A lot, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people were taking these pledges. Everyone and their mom was wearing just kidding. Our moms were not.
They were.
My mom got divorced. So, oh. I mean, maybe she did. Who knows?
She probably had a scarlet letter ring. So, yeah.
Like most things in Christianity, I like didn't fully buy. I remember signing the pledge. I clearly remember having a ring, but I don't remember. Like, I must have bought it on my own at some point. My high school boyfriend, though, the one I dated through like most of the end of high school, gave me a promise ring, which was a little different. I was like, is this a promise for us to be pure? Kind of, but it was more, it was a promise to get engaged.
Yes.
Yep.
I also gotta lock that down. Finger.
That's the pre-engagement, but without the commitment.
Like and a pre-engagement, kind of.
Yeah. A little doesn't make question sense. Of like, but is that, does that give... My thought was like when I had friends that would do that, that would get like a promise ring from their boyfriend, it meant that they would have sex with them because it meant that they were promising to get engaged. No. And so the promise ring from the boyfriend was like, oh, these are secular friends. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to imply that these
like,
were youth group.
Who are these?
I was like, no.
Fuck no.
This was at high school, at public high school that I did get to go to. I was there for a little short stint.
Sarai almost did a spit take when you said public high school. Like, that's that. You public high school?
Yeah.
Like, and lucky bitch.
Those promiscuous girls, just kidding. Mm-hmm. They would not do it with a boyfriend unless there was, like, a promise of something in the future, like a commitment of some force, you know? Oh. And it's like, that was the big, like, buy a diamond. I mean, everyone's like, you just need a diamond. You need a diamond. So when you would get a guy to buy you a jewelry piece that had a diamond-ish or like adjacent feeling to an engagement ring, it was like jewelry just opened them up. And it was kind of like once you saw
the legs just spread open.
Give me a ring, bitch. I will spread these legs. Like, have fun. That is so funny. Famously, I have seen and touched a lot of penises before I got – not a lot, but, like, enough that it wasn't a novelty so much by the time I got married. But, like, I did get engaged, like, kind of on the regular in Christian college. And I will say – I think it is –
Were they expecting, like – that it would change your relationship? Like, were they expecting
fiance engagement? One for sure thought that was a license for him to, like, demand blowjobs from me a lot. And if I didn't do it, he was physically violent. So, oopsies, that was sexual abuse. I forgot to content warning it. But I didn't know that at the time. I didn't realize that until I was, like, 34, right? And so, very, very cool. With him. And I think for me, it made it less – horrible. Like, it made me feel slightly a little bit less guilty about doing sexual things because partly I wasn't doing P-envy, but I was also really terrified of getting pregnant. And that's actually one of the reasons why I didn't marry any of these fiancés, because I was like, well, I'm 20. Like, I don't want to have a fucking baby. That's a terrible idea. Because I knew that for a long time. Like, when I was a child, you know, I'd ask my mom, like, why do you have all these fucking kids? Like, how fun is this? It does not seem fun. And she's like, so they can grow up and have more kids. And I'm like, what the fuck? No thanks. I'm going to have a life. And so then I did. But you know what I'm saying? I'm rambling now. But
well, yeah, because our sex education told us that the only way to not get pregnant was abstinence. It was like the only option. And pregnancy, especially as a young woman, was the most terrifying thing that could happen to you. It was like, if you get pregnant, The end.
It's like the visible acknowledgement of your dirty, dirty deeds. And I could not imagine, like, and even if I had been married, I didn't want to have, I knew for sure I did not want to have children when I was young. Like, I really wanted to wait until I had, like, some financial stability and, like, got to do some stuff in my life as an adult. Like, I wanted that. And I'm glad that I gave myself that time and space for sure.
Okay, Lindsay, I want to know, you've heard so many of my stories. Hit me with it. Come on. Purity culture horror. Let's go.
I feel like I have several. One of them I feel like is deeply embarrassing. So this podcast is my way for me to like talk way too much about my sex life. Sorry to all my previous sexual partners. I did not get their permission. My husband is fine. He doesn't care that I talk about stuff. One thing that was funny talking what we were just talking about with like not having sex because fear of getting pregnant was because, you know, if you do, you're keeping that baby, no questions asked, and you're going to be a teen mom. Maybe give it up for adoption, maybe, but usually someone in your family is going to adopt it. You just co-raise it with your family, right? And this is burned into my brain because the head pastor of a church when I was young, I was like 7 or 8, my dad was the youth pastor at this church, and this pastor gets up on stage in front of the whole congregation weeping, sobbing because his daughter is pregnant.
Oh my God.
And it was like this repentance thing. He had to like, I just don't understand why. And of course she like kept the baby, whatever. Like her baby is like now my Facebook friend. So weird.
so funny.
That baby that was like sobbed about on that stage. I don't like talked, but it was like because they're family friends that, you know, we kept in touch with over the years. But that was just so burnt, how shameful that was, you know, and that
for the parent, right?
Like, yes, he was deeply to be the pastor and have your daughter get like pregnant. And yeah, just, and she kept the baby, but like not from the gut, not from the dad, but it was like her, a guy. So she was in my dad's youth group, which was again why it was a big deal. And another guy in the youth group like dated her and then ended up marrying her and then like raised this kid as his own. And they are still together, which is like, wild. So there's that. That was like very formative to me, right? And that we could get into like the problems with that. We don't have to, but like weird. And so, you know, growing up, I did some things as we talked about. I did not wait until I got married to have sex. I was a rebel. Little Lindsay always like kind of pushing the boundaries on things. I was kind of a bad Christian. I realized like I didn't want to be a missionary. And I had sex. So,
oh, no. Just two
those
strikes.
Are the two things
you can't do.
Yeah.
That's it.
But prior to my husband, I had sex with two people before him. And I did not have an orgasm of any kind.
God.
Whatsoever until I was married.
No.
Or wait, maybe it was
never
until...
ever?
Never.
You never? What?
I didn't masturbate. The guys I had sex with didn't even seem to think that they did not see to it that I, cause I like didn't even know what I was looking for. You know what I mean? Like I just didn't, like I remember.
I know 100% what you're talking
make
about.
That so. I'm like, non. I don't know. I literally started having orgasms when I was like 5. Like, that was a thing I was doing. Like, it's so weird. Yeah.
Well, and when you talk about that, clearly everyone's like wired so differently and people's libidos are different and that's fine. Like it clearly wasn't a thing that I was like, because we weren't talking about that when I was younger. So I didn't, you know,
when I was little, I didn't know what that was, of course, but yeah.
Right. But I don't even ever remember talking about, like, I didn't even think I knew females could masturbate. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I didn't know how they would do it. There was nothing to hold onto.
Because we talked about it in youth group about men so much. Yes. Like that was bad and porn
boys
was bad,
masturbating was like common so knowledge, right?
Literally so bad.
All that conversation. So that was like a huge – that's a purity culture fucking horror story from my crypt of going to like middle school youth group or high school youth group. And it's always – we're always talking about the boys and how they're, you know, visual. And if you wear a bra, they'll see it and like really be turned on. And all the boys were like, it was fine for them to joke about masturbation. And like, we all would talk about like everyone, all the boys do that. And then like, no girls. We never talked about it. And I was like, I got a pamphlet from my pediatrician's office that told me that masturbation is when you rub the foreskin of your vagina and it can lead to orgasm. And I'm pretty sure that's a thing I do all the time. Also, but I can't say anything because no other girls I knew like ever did that, like, or talked about it or maybe even thought about it. And I don't know. I just like happily stumbled upon it as a body experience, but it's just so strange to me, like that feeling of alienation and the idea that somehow I'm like bad because I've done this totally normal thing that every child really normally does explore in some way at some point. So it is really devastating, I think, to feel kind of on the outside and like you're a weird person because only boys are supposed to be obsessed with masturbation and sex. And
yeah,
I like wasn't obsessed, I don't think, but I thought I would always be like, well, they always say boys think of sex every 7 seconds or something. And I'm like, oh my God, you guys, it's like when you all asked me about how often I think of the Roman Empire, like people were talking about that being a thing with men and whatever. And I was like, well, I think of the Roman Empire like every day, but I think it's because one, I might be a man. I don't know. I mean, just kidding. I'm not, but just kidding. It's not that. But the truth is like what it is the cultural and societal parts of it, but also that I also always had an interest in sex more in lots of cases than the men I've been in relationship with or who I've known. And it's interesting because I don't think I'm particularly like prurient, but I do feel like I've always had that like walking this line of like, I want to be a good girl. And also like, this is a weird thing for me to not do because I feel bad when I don't do it, like for a long time, you know? Anyway, I call it being horngry now.
You learned from a young age that some of that stress and anxiety could be relieved by having positive endorphins in your body. And that's something that I did not get in my life. I really had an idea of sex as something that was more of not an obligation, but like only married people did it. And I didn't understand what being married would be like or was. So it was like a thing that I didn't, it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me because I wasn't married.
And it also wasn't for you because you're a woman and you're supposed to think of it as a chore and drudgery. Like pop culture and Christian culture reinforced that idea forever and always and still talks about it like that. And that was the other, like when I got married, I was like, finally, I'm going to have sex all the time. It's going to be great. And like my ex-husband, immediately we never had sex. Like we didn't have sex. We had sex on our wedding night kind of badly. And then almost never again, except for maybe once a month. So it was not pleasant for me for years because I wasn't actually like getting enough of it. And it makes me mad. Kev, I've made it clear that I'm really fucking mad about this. Like I actually am really mad.
And when it makes me sad, and that's why like sharing this story is like so deeply embarrassing when I think about like, I think back on and like warning, this is just a little graphic talking about like sexual experiences, like having someone go down on me and it feeling good, but then not knowing enough about myself or my body to be able to, I mean, A, he didn't check in, and B, I wasn't able to tell him. I mean, it's taken me years to be able, so many years into my marriage to say like what I like and what I don't like. And also realizing people were, I think it's just a little trickier to get me there. And so, and I know that now, and my partner knows that and has spent time like figuring it out. We've like got a good rhythm, but it is just, it's like so sad to me that I just wasn't ever given the education to know that like, I could have been having those pleasure moments. Like it's just because I only went to Christian school and I was homeschooled and like churches don't talk about like, I just didn't even know that like female masturbation was a thing. Like people with vaginas can do that too. Who knew? And for men, it was bad. Like that they were horn dogs and they were giving into sexual temptation and lust and yada, yada. Everything was just, it was bad. Just couched in so much shame, right?
Yeah.
Everything.
Totally.
And so I think I was afraid of that part of my body. And like when you get those little flutters, I think I just shut it down because I didn't know what that was. And I knew it wasn't good, right? Even when I decided to like step out and have sex. And then And then here's the other piece about the lack of education and the shame piece about having sex is that when I finally did have sex, I was not on birth control and I did not insist that he used a condom. Again, because I didn't have agency. I didn't know how to talk about sex. Mm-hmm. Sure shit didn't know how to do it. And I got a fucking STD and had a cancer scare and had to have surgeries. And like, it became this whole big nightmare chapter in my life because I felt that I could not get on birth control because that would then be admitting I was actively having sex. And yep. If you all know, if you know the stigma around birth control, if you were on birth control, you were a slut. That's what I thought.
Yep. 100%. I mean, 100%. I had friends that were on birth control who I was like, oh, that means you're having sex all the time.
Yeah. Or they're because like, no, it's for my acne or my painful periods or whatever. And I'm like, oh, really? You can do
you're
that?
Like, mm-hmm.
It's weird.
I was always like, bullshit, you're just having sex. Like, it's not for acne. I totally judge those people. I was like, mm-mm.
My mom was so extreme in like her pro-life phase, her extra pro-life phase where mm-hmm. she was volunteering all the time for that. Like, she told me that birth control was abortion because it prevents yeah. an implantation of a fertilized egg. And I'm like, okay, that feels like a lot. Like, I don't think that's true. But also, I mean, it's true how it works, but like,
I was like, that's how true. I didn't get on birth control when I got married.
Maybe it's not. Yeah. Oh, I did too.
Even married, I used a diaphragm. It was like the year 2000 when I got married.
And I cannot believe that existed.
Yeah. I got a diaphragm and I didn't know that you had to also use spermicide with it. Mm. So that was a learning curve. Same with you, Lindsay. I had never masturbated. And so I had never like even put my fingers inside of my own self. So me putting a diaphragm in on my wedding night was the first time that I had gone like up that far. I mean, not the first time because I practiced it a couple times, I think, uh-huh. before to like make sure I could get it in and get it out. But like even that, knowing where my cervix was by feeling it with my own hand was like brand new to me.
I know? Definitely and I was 20 did not and put my fingers in that far. Like, that's
I mean,
lot.
The diaphragm has to like go up around it and then you have yeah. to pop it off. It's like it's like a whole not pleasant experience, first of all, to be horrible. Touching yourself in a way that's very like medical and, you know, gross. Mm-hmm. It also smelled gross, the diaphragm. Mm-hmm. Side note, it was not, and the spermicide was disgusting. Ugh, it was not gross. Like a pleasant
I hate this.
Preparation I hate
this.
For sex.
I'm like so upset. This is the Tales of the Crypt is literally like, diaphragm? What the fuck? I don't even know what one looks like. I wouldn't know what it smells
like. I'll draw you a picture.
I don't want to
really
know.
We're really getting into it today. I love upsetting. That.
Like this is a well, horrifying. This was,
like our
and that's how you
episode,
prepare to
I do
fuck.
Feel like
cool.
Yes.
And now don't you feel sexy? Don't mind me. I'm going to go
romance
find my cervix and insert a diaphragm and then spermicide it. Like, I'll see you in a minute, baby.
Also, the spermicide had to go on like within like 3-5 minutes of ejaculation or something. It was like this really insane window of time that I was like, wait, are you going to come? I have to put
are you
spermicide
in a minute. Oh my God.
I yeah, did. No, I didn't know anything. I literally didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, ew. Gosh. I'm so glad it's not anymore. After my hysterectomy, I felt liberation in a way that was like so amazing. I wish I had felt that liberation at 13 to just be like, oh, I have all the knowledge that I need to know to protect myself from STIs, from pregnancy, from, you know, whatever. And that all I would have had to deal with was like heartache. That would have been great.
Oh my God.
Because once you get enough endorphins.
To be like, if you do, I mean, this is the thing too, is that by making sex before marriage so taboo and such a forbidden thing, they also create the self-fulfilling prophecy of if you have sex, bad things will happen. You will get chlamydia
right.
and you will die. Like that hilarious joke in Mean Girls is literally like the sex education we got in youth group, right? Have sex, you'll get chlamydia, you'll die. It's a sin, slippery slope, then you're fucking an animal. Like, whatever, as we all know. But yep. it's because they don't allow us to find that information. Even the information itself is bad. We're not allowed to go outside of the church or whatever teachers we have there to find information, even about our own fucking bodies and what we need yeah. to do to be a living human being who's healthy and, you know, actually existing here on this this earthly plane, because I feel like my religious upbringing was so much about like transcendence and like dissociation and bifurcation of my spirit, mind, and body, you know, just like none of that could be coexisting. But we do make that into, of course, then you get HPV and have to have, you know, a cervical cancer scare. But I did too. But I did use a condom. But also, everyone has HPV. And so just guess what? Everyone has it. Get the vaccine if you're a child. And if you're listening to this, I really hope that you don't experience any of this bullshit, because purity culture will fuck a person up like hard forever. Not forever, maybe, but kind of a lot.
Yeah. And the shame around getting HPV and then having to admit, like, to tell my parents, because I'm already married at this point. Like, part of the reason that, because this stuff all came about later, I think it's maybe when Nick and I were engaged, and he was so like kind about it, and it was just like he was so supportive, and which is part of the reason why I think like I knew I wanted to marry, because he just had no judgment, right, yeah, about my sexual past and that I was like affecting. He was like going with me to all these doctor's appointments. But then I eventually, you know, had to tell my parents what was going on, just like, because it's like, hey, I might have cancer. That's a thing you should tell your folks. And just like, man, the disappointment and the shame I felt around that.
Lindsay, did you feel like a consequence of that was a punishment for having sex? Like, did you make that own connection, and did you like, were you mean to yourself about that?
Yeah, I had a ton of guilt over it and felt like it was a direct consequence of me having premarital sex. Whereas now that I'm older, I think that it was a direct consequence of not having proper sex education or understanding, you know, how 100%. STDs were, advocating for myself, any of those things. I had none of that. And of course I have myself to blame. Should I have, you know, advocated better? Yes. But I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the language. And frankly, I think any of you who have been in purity culture will know that the shame is so deep and so far reaching that you don't know yourself, and you don't know how to talk about your wants, your needs, because you're not supposed to have those, right? So it's, you push it down and you push it down. And if that part comes out, it's like an accident, right? And you don't know how to deal with it. So yeah, it was, the layers are, and I've talked about this before in the podcast, and then even going into my marriage and talking about what I want, realizing things that like, oh, sex shouldn't be painful, like, was a fucking revelation for me. I had no idea. Oh man, the years of my life that I feel like were not wasted, but could have been a lot better.
Could have been more better. Pleasurable. Yeah. That's for fucking sure.
That is for fucking sure.
Yeah.
I would love to hear some of our listeners' stories, because quite frankly, I'm tired of hearing my own. Just kidding. Mine are just like, it's like I won by being a virgin until I got married. I also got married at 20, so I didn't have to wait a super long time. But it's like after winning, then just comes all like that. It was weird. Winning the virginity until marriage award was like not as great as they said it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't be the only one who has not regrets. They're not regrets. They're just like, oh, bless her heart. You know, she did her best.
She did.
She missed out on a lot of good stuff.
Pure virginal queen. You win that award. You win it. I was that chewed up piece of gum.
Just a recycled virgin, as Rebecca St. James would say.
A recycled virgin. Oh, God. Okay, so let's hear from our listeners and fans. And so I'm going to do some rapid fire ones at the beginning, just some fun little stories that people submitted, mostly via TikTok. And then we'll get into some longer form ones that were submitted. So we will take turns reading all the fun purity culture shit that everyone else had to deal with. So,
and also not fun. Starting off strong. In a lot of cases, let's not forget our content. Decidedly. Purity culture is the same as rape culture, which is one thing I learned after I realized that my first fiance had been sexually abusing me. And that's honestly, like, I really, really think it's true, because it is the thing upon which women saying no, no, no is like not taken seriously. It's all, it was a part of our pop culture and our Christian culture to just know that like men can't help themselves and it's on you. Even mm-hmm. if you do have sex or get raped, it's because of you, what you're wearing, like whatever. So I do want to just say that like we can laugh at things like Lindsay said at the top, and we can bring a spirit of like, okay, we're going to heal. We're going to work through it. We're going to move on and be like, wow, that was weird. And also, it is really serious and it does affect all of our lives, as you've fucking heard, because I can't stop. We can't stop bemoaning it because it's really hard. So hard.
And okay. That's why we could unpack it for the rest of our lives. So we're really grateful to everybody who shared. We know that part of the beauty of this podcast is that we're able to kind of talk about these things and feel – we have these like inside jokes with people we've never met, right? Which is so interesting, like that we're all in the same boat. So, all right, here we go. Starting off strong with a submission from Taylor. Said, our school district hired a pastor / sex educator named Ed, nicknamed Sex Ed, which is fucking hilarious. Sex Ed.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to love Sex Ed in a moment.
Oh, gosh.
Because here's the thing. Pastor / sex educator.
Terrible idea.
No, bad.
Don't do that.
Really bad combo. That's why heavy air quotes. And he stood in front of our class and said we would be like a used toothbrush if we had sex before marriage. And nobody wants a used toothbrush. Ew. Thanks, Sex Ed, for that. That's gross. Okay.
Can I just tell you, there was a time as a child that I dropped my toothbrush into the toilet somehow. And then my mom's like, oh, well, we'll just boil it. And then we boiled it and I had to still use it. So, I mean.
All right. Tell Taylor, just boil it.
Just boil your vagina and it'll be fine.
Yep.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
All right, next one, which is kind of hilarious because we joke about this often. This one says, I remember sitting in the pews hearing about how people shouldn't lay with animals. I was pretty terrified that as a child I might accidentally attract an animal.
I mean, you're probably watching Snow White, Cinderella. They're all just like bringing in the
attracting animals left and right.
They are.
Bestiality. Why is that a thing a child should worry about? Like, why is that the thing that Christians keep talking about? The slippery slope always leads to like fucking sheep.
You're going to accidentally slip your dick into a sheep? Like,
well, it might fall in to a sheep. They're so cuddly. I'm just,
they do. You know? They do seem very cuddly. I've like, never cuddled a sheep, but I think I would like it.
I love the euphemism of lie child with. Beat. Also, that's really funny.
Right. Yeah. Very biblical language right there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Next up is from Megan. I went to a True Love Waits rally, and the main speakers were a couple that told us their former sex partners haunted their wedding bed.
Ooh.
Ew.
Spooky
months. It's time. Ooh. Wait, what? Like they were like on their wedding night, and they're like in the room, and they're just like, oh my God, there's Barry. Like,
hey, y'all, stop having seances before you have sex in your marital bed, okay? Don't
Put your Ouija board away. God.
It's a ghost. On you.
They're just hovering over your marital bed saying, you're dirty and used. You're
I thought they were
toothbrush.
No, I were going to be whispering things like, she likes it this way.
No. They're not helpful ghosts. They're just there to fuck up the vibe.
It's not Casper the friendly ghost.
They're just sitting there doing a New York Times crossword puzzle in their ghost chair, like just observing. That would be actually the worst kind of ex-partner haunting you. I'm just going to sit here.
I'm just going to sit here. Don't mind me.
Yeah. So that's a special entry. I was like, I had never – that's a new one for me. Hadn't heard that one.
I like it. Yeah. That's some real magic stuff right there.
Yeah. Someone said, I got Dobson's Preparing for Adolescence book. Same. Hard same.
Same.
But my mom ripped out the page about masturbation before she gave it to me.
Wait, was it Was it for masturbation or just talking about it at all?
It was not pro masturbation.
That's what I know.
She just
but like the mom did not want them to
know about it.
The word's not even gonna cross your lips, much less the whole idea.
I was given that book and I was so embarrassed by it because we never talked about sex or whatever. I hid it under the mattress under my bed and like never read the whole thing. So if there was a page about masturbation, I didn't read it because I never read the whole book.
I didn't either. Or I read it and was like, well, obviously I'm not going to touch myself. If I'm not going to touch anyone else, why would I touch myself?
I just want to say I really am curious about how this person found out that that was the page ripped out of their adolescence.
I do love that. I do love that they did some investigating there seems to be a missing part.
I'm a detective. I'm literally going to hunt down what that page is. And oh, it's about masturbation. Cool. Amazing.
Wasn't there a glossary in that book or something? Oh, like
probably. Maybe. That's probably it.
All right. Good for you. I love the investigative
me too.
Work That's that fun. This person did to solve the mystery.
This last one I'm going to read is from Laura. And she said that at her youth group, we had to stand in a line, brush our teeth, spit into one cup of water, and the last person in the line had to drink it.
Stop.
And that was sex before marriage. Spit water.
Okay.
It's disgusting on every level. Mostly just the drinking, the toothbrush.
The hygiene water. Level. I mean, just the like gross out level. Is this Fear Factor night at youth group? Like what?
Yeah. It's make you afraid of sex, Fear Factor.
They just ensured that all of those kids had fresh, clean makeout mouths.
Mm.
Like, except for the kid who drank the spit water because no one's kissing spit water, kid.
That is so upsetting. And like knowing youth groups, I feel like there's probably one kid who's like, oh, I'll do it. You know, because kids are always doing
that. And you know, there was those guys that did that like.
Yes.
Mouth, and they were going to.
Oh, God.
Gross.
Also, did y'all have to share a toothbrush or did they provide toothbrushes to every individual in this?
Did everyone get to take their toothbrush home? It was like an oral hygiene night.
Oral hygiene? They're like, don't put your mouth on anyone's
for sure.
Genitals, by the way.
Also, here's some deodorant. Toothbrush and deodorant.
Oh my gosh. I don't like that one. Very upsetting. I'm really sorry, Laura. That's fucking gross.
I don't like it. I wish we had more details, Laura, if you're listening, please. It was a TikTok comment. You know, there's only so much you can give on TikTok. So like, that's Laura, all the context I have. So
Laura, yeah, I gotta details. Know.
I feel like I need to do a poll on like TikTok one of these days. Like, what were all the weird things, like analogies that you were given about sex before? You know, we all have heard the chewed up piece of gum. Now we've heard the used toothbrush, but also the
spit brushing in the water.
And then there's like the ghosts now haunting the marriage bed. Like, what else? Like,
Do the poll.
Okay.
Sure.
But also, let's get a head start with this listener submission from Tabitha.
So the thing with purity culture that I think a lot of people from the outside don't understand is that there are things we are explicitly told, and then they're more so than that. Not that a lot of those things aren't bad enough. Like, you know, if you don't have your virginity, you're a chewed up piece of gum, you're a test-driven car, you're a crumpled piece of paper, you're a flower with the petals ripped off. I mean, you're a cupcake that the frosting's been licked off, you're a sucker that fell on the ground. Like, there's so many explicitly damaging ideologies, but the implicit ones can be far more damaging. And that's sort of like how my story kicks off, is there were a lot of things that I implicitly believed that I felt like were implied. And I'll talk to my story about other people and they're like, well, I was never told that. I was never taught that. And I'm like, yeah, I wasn't directly either. But when you're taught all this other stuff, there's this grand likelihood that you will have also these subsequent takeaways. No one has to tell you them. They just are true because they reflect the reality of what you already know is true, what you are being told is true.
Oh, yeah. God. So the moral of the story is, if you had sex before marriage, you were disgusting.
Right. Disgusting. Yeah. It was okay to discard you. It was okay to demoralize you. It was okay to shame you in all these different ways. And like, it wasn't just, oh, you had sex. It was like, the repercussions of that were social. They were cultural. They came at you from all these different places. I mean, I was ashamed at feeling thoughts of lust. I literally don't know how so many of these teenagers survived.
Repression and dissociation, right? Like, yeah. I think we know. We did it.
And now we're all in a lot of therapy and having like midlife crises and figuring
and out. And Lexapro, actually are. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, medicine. Hello.
We're finally on meds. We're finally figuring out like our sexual desires / orientations and all of these fun things. I mean, yes. I'm glad we're finally getting there, but it would have been nice to like figure out some of the stuff before I was 42 years old.
Quickly, just point out one more time, the compulsory heteronormativity in all of purity culture is a big problem too. Then that's another reason why like being when I was younger and people would be like, you're a lesbian. I'm like, what? That's crazy. Also, but I do like, I did wonder why my best friend didn't kiss me when she confessed she had kissed a girl once at a party when she was drunk. I never told anybody that until like the last year, probably, because it was so like shameful. It was like a terrible thought that I had that I was like really embarrassed about. It was strange. But, you know, not that long later, I did realize that I was sexually attracted to many different gender expressions, but I just didn't know like how to do that, what to do with that. And so I think it's also like how about the layers keeping us from knowing ourselves again? Yes. Like we're all wrapped over and over and over again in like this bubble wrap garbage. And then we wonder why we've never been able to understand any part of ourselves. Like we're not allowed to, we're not supposed to do that. Thank you. Soapbox, yeah. Stepping down.
We love a Sarai soapbox. Should we trademark that? Sarai soapbox TM.
Yep.
I have a submission via Facebook that I would like to share from Monroe. Monroe says, my first love, we both got a heavy dose of purity culture and tried the whole don't kiss until the altar thing, but we loopholed that shit by kissing through plastic wrap. Bless her little heart.
You guys.
We eventually did most things sexually together except P and V. But then I married the first man that I had P and V sex with because I was so ashamed of sleeping with him that I thought that was the way to fix it. Plot twist, it wasn't. We were both miserable and it was awful. My now husband and I are ethically non-monogamous.
Well, fuck yes. Good job, Monroe. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That is exactly a beautiful ending to a very horrible start.
You guys, the plastic wrap is that. I feel like that's straight out of what was that show?
The Pie Pushing Maker.
Daisies?
Pushing Daisies. I was going to say.
Yes.
It's totally that's like straight that. Out.
Yeah.
They did.
Yes.
It was way cuter.
Yeah.
It was really cute
in Pushing Daisies, not cute in purity culture.
Correct.
Monroe brings up that thing of like having sex with somebody, then the guilt of that was like, well, if I get married to you, then I won't have to feel guilty because even if we had sex before marriage, we're now married. So it kind of like, it's Christian math.
It is a loophole.
It just is like, it negates another.
Christian math.
Yes. Christian math. It's 100% Christian math. If you have sex before you're married, but then you get married, then the sin
to that
count
same
anymore.
Person.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That sin retroactively becomes okay sex.
Because
right?
You knew yep. That that yes. Was your
soulmate.
You had God in your heart.
Yes. Yes.
You were married in your heart.
Yes. Yes. Also,
you didn't have that legal paperwork.
Right. I also want – this is the other thing that I always am like, what the fuck about? Because Christians are always like, oh, premarital sex is a sin. It's bad. Yet – and also, I feel like what was marriage in the Old Testament? Like, it was not a ceremony and a white wedding dress and one man and one woman. Like, the story of fucking Jacob, the progenitor of the 12 tribes. He's going out trying to fuck Rachel, can't get her, enslaves himself, indentured servitude for 7 more years, gets with Leah, he's so bummed, and then has to work 7 more years to have the other daughter, which is so gross and weird too. But they're just like put together in a tent and they lie with one another and then they're married. Like that is weird. But also like, I don't know. I think it's very interesting how much we create culture, like Western culture, white supremacy, fucking culture. And then the whole entire religion is just spun from that, and not understanding that, like, even their scriptures don't say any, like, they don't really fucking say the words premarital sex because it's not a thing in the Bible. Like, it's actually never really a thing. It's they have sex, they lie together, and then there they are. Ta-da.
Yeah. And that, I think, kind of makes them married. Also, let's talk about, like, how young people were when they got married back in those days. Also, the fact that people were taking multiple wives, which is not a thing that Christians do. But, like, I don't think that human beings – I got married at 27. Like, you shouldn't wait till you're 27 to have sex. Like, no. Your body was not made for that.
It is really not healthy. Like, I really believe it's not healthy for your body.
It's not medically healthy.
Yeah. It's – ugh. Okay, well, I have a sad one now, and just gonna bring back that somber content warning. This one's anonymous. I grew up in an evangelical Christian home. I was all about it. I loved church, mission trips, and youth group. Same. See you. My dad gave me a promise ring when I turned 13, as if he needed to. I wasn't ever going to have sex before marriage. I became a Young Life leader in college and immediately started dating one of the leaders that knew me when I was a Young Life high school student. Ugh. Edgy, creepy, edgy, but all right. Like, if this
little groomery there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had lots of conversations about lines we weren't willing to cross, and because we were good little Christians, blowjobs were a no-go. One day he asked, I went with it. He broke up with me the next day.
Piece of shit.
Wait, like as retribution? Like, was that a test? That
probably.
They failed?
He found out she was a slut. So, you know.
Cool. I'm aghast. I'm going to assume this guy's name is Travis. Like, fuck off, Travis. That's disgusting. 2 weeks later in Bible study, the leader said that oral sex is the same as sex. So my virginity was gone. That was my freshman year. Fast forward 3 years of me not dating in college because I was traumatized. And it's the last semester of my senior year. I was out with friends drinking and was raped by one of them. I can't even explain the isolation you feel when you can't even talk to your friends because you are so ashamed of yourself. I spent years blaming myself for what someone else did to me. I felt like trash because all I had ever learned was that women are valued for their virginity. Every Bible study I had ever done was focused on that fact. I graduated a couple weeks later and really spiraled. To this day, my best friends, who are all Young Life leaders, still don't know what happened. I needed them so much at that time. God. This is sad. I'm really sorry.
It's really sad. It's really sad.
And that she couldn't, like, even reach out to her friends because the shame around it, the shame around being a sexual assault victim is one of the worst things to come out and tell people about. There's so much shame around what I did and how I caused that to happen to me. And
if you asked for it, like, what were you wearing?
Well,
what
signals was I sending? Were you flirting? Must have been confused. Like,
you were drinking.
Yes.
You know, this is why purity culture and rape culture are one and the same. Like,
yes,
100%. This is what that means.
Yes.
It's so fucked. Back to our story. I'm very much not a Christian, but the trauma of purity culture still haunts me. 2 years ago, I realized that the fact that I was still wearing my promise ring was adding so much burden to my life, endless shame, and I took it off. Thank you. Good job. Liberation. Fuck
yay.
Yes. There are so many that have been so negatively impacted by the purity generation. I know so many people who have left the church in the last decade, and they all state that as the reason. Sometimes I think we need ex-cult member therapy. And honestly,
100%.
You're right. We do need ex-cult therapy, and we need, I mean, religious trauma therapy. We also need help with our sexual shit because we don't need to live like a one-dimensional life, and we don't need to hide all of these parts of ourselves that are, again, like normal, completely healthy things about us as human beings. And so I am so grateful that you were able to take that fucking purity ring off, or that promise ring off. I hope you dropped it down a sewer drain or put it in a shadow box with like hellish other things to make it a tragic art piece, whatever. Good job. I'm so glad you're out of that. Also, it's fucking horrible. And I'm really sorry. Like, we do
carry
these things with us.
Yeah, that was a heavy one. Man, I want to give everyone a hug. Yeah. Just to say, like, I'm sorry. And also know that, like, we feel it so deeply because we know it. Like, we know everything that person said, like, rang so true. Even if it wasn't necessarily my experience, you know, I think it's just the shame. We all know that deep shame so well and what that hindered and how that fucked us up and how we weren't able to talk honestly with anyone, even people who were supposed to be safe. Dude. Okay. Meg, are we ready to do another one?
Okay. This one was a submission from Rebecca. My husband and I grew up in a very conservative Baptist church in Central Florida. I feel like that statement alone says enough, but I'll add a little more. The church preached full purity until marriage, and that meant absolutely no touching. So no hand-holding, kissing, hugging, etc. And in order to avoid
Florida, let me just say. God.
In order to avoid lustful temptations, also just lustful temptations, such a great phrase for a young teenager to know and say. To avoid lustful temptations, we would abide by a 6-inch rule, which meant staying at least 6 inches apart at all times. Good Lord. When I turned 15, my parents gave me a purity ring. The ring symbolized my commitment to purity until marriage, and I remembered most teen services were centered around staying pure. Mm-hmm. At one service, they gave an altar call and encouraged those who wanted to remain pure until marriage to come to the front and to promise to our youth pastor that we will stay pure until marriage. Mm-hmm. This was especially awkward for me because our youth pastor was my boyfriend's dad. What?
Oh my God. Yikes.
That was a twist I was not expecting, and I love it.
That was a really good twist.
I'm so happy.
This is good. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Pulling us out of a hole. Go.
That responsibility of purity seemed to rely heavily on the modesty of girls. So there was a lot of slut shaming for wearing things that were, quote, too tight, which meant showing curves, too short, which was above mid-knee, or too low. We followed the three-finger from collarbone rule. You can't even let cleavage show. There were so many. I'm sorry. How many rulers did you have around the house, Rebecca? There's like the 6 inches you had to stay apart when your boyfriend was around. There's the three fingers. I guess you didn't have to use a ruler for that. But like,
no,
I really is definitely so not much looking. Mind
a lot
work.
Of measurement. Yeah.
Yes. This is Christian Rebecca math, y'all.
It's Christian math.
This is Christian math.
Damn. Christian math. Okay.
Okay. So Rebecca goes on to say, as we all know, this type of atmosphere is a playground for sexual predators. The church had a private school, and one of the high school teachers sexually assaulted one of the students. She says, this poor girl, I remember so many of my peers and the adults slut-shaming the girl and blaming the whole thing on her. Thankfully, someone reported the offender, and he's still behind bars to this day. But that horrible ideology is still preached at that church. Consent was never talked about because it was never even considered rape. Quote, the girl must have been asking for it in some way. A lot of times, the actions of men were brushed off because, quote, God made them sexual beings and they're just acting the way they are because they are men. This is like such damaging for boys, for those like sweet boys in youth group to be told that like, yeah, that they need to pursue their toxic masculinity, really. It's just like, you can't help it. God. The shame and the blame that was put on young girls and young women is, I'm sorry. It's not okay. I'm not just angry. I'm really sad about it.
Yeah.
It makes me really sad.
And I'm really sad and angry that it continues and more generations are going through the same shit we went through and like coming out as damaged, but luckily having more resources. I feel like a lot of people like that we've even talked to, for sure, Sinane and Fina, like these amazing, brilliant younger women who also were indoctrinated in purity culture and all of that bullshit. Like, I'm really grateful that a lot more people are able to come out and kind of find common ground with people who are leaving the religion. Because I remember in 2004, when I was very much on my like, we're not really quite doing this anymore. Like I didn't want to go to church. I didn't, whatever. I was just done. But I then worked at a church and it ruined my life. And I was like, well, there we go. Self-fulfilling prophecy again, question mark. But yeah, I think it's so frustrating to me that it's still happening. And that's one of the main reasons why I keep coming around being like, hey, I don't really want to be an asshole, but like if you're still a part of the evangelical church in any marginalized body of any kind, then you really need to leave. Like it's not a safe place for you and it never will be. No. Great. I did have a remembering from my tales of purity culture crypt that I kind of want to share. You know, content warning again, sexual assault. But since I can't stop saying rape in this whole episode, because again, like purity culture is that, I've never really talked about this part of my story, like publicly. When I was 34 and walking down the street in San Diego, a person like talked to me and then we just ended up like hanging out, which is sort of weird, but I was just like in a really open and good mood and it was fun and whatever. A lot of things happened that were eye-opening to me about things that had happened before in my life, as I've mentioned. Like that night was the first time I even realized that my first fiance had sexually abused me, because what happened was he wouldn't leave where I was. And I stated my boundaries and I thought I was being like really firm and it was fine. But I also was having fun, like for the first time in a really long time, and flirting with somebody. And it was like meaningless and it was fine. But also it became dangerous. And I remember I've said this part before. If he comes, he'll go was like the thing that I thought. And I was like, what? And also it was weird because like purity culture was a reason I was like, well, if I just give you a blowjob, that's not so bad, right? And then in the middle of it, I was like, I can't survive this. Like I have to just get it done. And so that's what I did. When I got home, I was really confused about what had happened because I had no framework for it. Like it was so not a thing that I would do. Like have sex with somebody randomly. Like it wasn't, I never had, obviously, like I was still married. And when I got home, I told my pastor that I had sex with somebody else when I was on my trip. And he was like, oh, I thought that I had to worry about men and not you. Usually it's the men who are doing things like that. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And it became clearer to me, like as I worked through telling people what happened, especially with my ex-husband, who actually was really kind and supportive during this, where I was like, I said no again and again. I didn't want to do it. I'm like, I was like hurt. My body hurt. Like it wasn't a thing I enjoyed. And he's the one that helped me realize that it was a sexual assault and not me having like weird out of character sex with somebody. And that's also where I had to ask myself the question, like, well, what if I didn't want to say no? Because I never even gave myself the opportunity to say yes or no. And I think that's also another really important part of what purity culture takes away from us. It does take away our agency. Mm. It takes away our ability to literally even say like, oh, maybe I do want to like make out with this person or like fool around or something. Like, I think it is valuable for us to recognize that like, not being able to even hear our own desires or wants and not being able to give them air at all is also part of our shadow and like part of what we get to and need to integrate into our lives and ourselves. Because the part of me that probably did want to like feel affection and feel desired and feel like I was having fun and like it was nice. It was nice, you know, the not the bad parts, but like it was a nice night before that. And I didn't feel bad about it. I was just doing whatever.
What I'm hearing in your story is I think that like I have some of those experiences too with like having sex that just wasn't, it was, kind of enjoyable, but there was a guilt and shame around it. But I also just think because we were never, I think since there was not clear and enthusiastic consent, right, that is also where it gets so gray and a thing that we were never mm-hmm. taught and we didn't know. And so like you can have these experiences and they're very muddled and it's hard yes. to know like, and with the shame around it, but also like, did I even want that? Was I okay with that? It happened, but like, I feel really icky. And like, what is that coming from? It's just, I have hope for these future generations that we're starting to have these conversations. And like, you know, it's an evangelicalism issue, but it's also an American issue. This affects so much more than, but specifically in evangelicalism because it was harped on so much. Yeah. But as a culture, we have a problem with, you know, toxic masculinity and rape culture and all of these things. But I just, I hate this for like young us. I, and these stories that we're reading, like we could probably say these things so we're blue in the face. It's so unfortunate and it makes us sad and mad and everything in between. And yeah, it's not right. And I hope that our kids have so much more freedom when it comes to this stuff. And like sex is intimate and it's complicated and it's, I want to say it's hard to talk about, but I think that's probably just my upbringing saying that. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to talk about. Like, it is part of us and who we are. We are sexual beings. And I think talking about their needs and wants and desires, whether it be having them or not having them, you know, mm-hmm. learning about what it means to be a person with a big libido and what it means to be a person that doesn't, like all of those things. I've also had to learn that. Like, I mm-hmm. thought that since I don't have the highest libido, that meant, yeah, I wasn't sex positive or whatever. And I've just learned that like, oh no, it doesn't mean that at all. Anyways, this is a little bit of a rabbit trail. I will say I saved what I think is the best for last for you Yay. To read there, Sarai, to like bring us home on. It's more of a lighthearted one. So
I'm so excited. Noelle, thank you for sharing your story with us and for letting us know that all of the events in this story are consensual. I had learned from church that sex before marriage was a sin, but even though we had special, quote, discipleship days, end quote, where we were separated out by gender and talked to about modesty, that's what we did do. They never talked about all the things that were almost sex, but weren't quite intercourse. I learned from my non-Christian friends about things like manual sex and oral sex, and those seemed like fair game to me. The church had never told me otherwise. I knew I was fence straddling. Ooh, straddling, sexy word. I was even dating a non-believer, a big Noel, unequally yoked Danielle.
Scandalous.
Noel. Unequally yoked Noel. Damn. It turned out I was on my way out of the church, but I was still committed to virginity until marriage and remained so for a long time. So did I. Even after I wasn't really like a Christian and I was like, this is just weird now. I don't know what to do. Okay. On this particular day, I was with my boyfriend and I wanted to try all the new things I had learned about. I touched his penis and I liked how much he liked it. When I thought about touching his penis with my mouth, though, I thought to myself, I can't do it. Then my biblical reflexes kicked in and I immediately thought, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And that gave me the courage to try. I've always thought it was funny that Jesus gave me the strength to give oral sex for the first time. Thank you, Jesus.
Isn't that the best?
Oh, this is a good story.
I love that verse just popped into her head and yep. she went for it.
Yep.
That's damn. Great. You know what? I started to do that with like worship songs, like just singing them to myself sometimes or like helping, you know, it's just like, yes, I can do all things.
Yeah. Yes. You can mm-hmm. give good head. Okay. Yep.
The worship song I most like to sing to myself is Jehovah Jireh, but it's just because it's such a fun little Jehovah Jireh, my provider, strength is sufficient for me.
It's sufficient for me.
I also want to give our listeners a deep cut true story that you'll probably never know about, really, unless you hear it from me right here. The first time we recorded High Times with the Most High, we were already high when we started recording it. So like it was bad and we can't really recover that, you know, but one of the most amazing things that happened during it was somehow we ended up talking about Jehovah Jireh. And I was like, we need to get the website jehovahjireh.net. And then I went on the internet and like got it, I thought. And then
we were all on board. We were high and we were pumped. We were like, we were ready. Like, we couldn't get JehovahJireh.com, but .net was the next best. And you were just like, got your credit card out. You were like, I'm queen of getting, and we were pumped. We were like, yes, clearly we have to own JehovahJireh.net. I don't know why, but in this moment, it was very important.
It was so important. And then Meg was like, okay, so J-E-H-O-V-A-H. And I was like, oh, I spelled Jehovah with no H at the end. And so if y'all want to go to the Holy Ghosting website, but find it a funner way, it's Jehovah, no H, Jireh, JehovahJireh.net. And you'll find our homepage. That's it. That's the whole point.
It redirects. It redirects to Holy Ghosting. Yep. We own. We are the proud owners of JehovahJireh.net spelled wrong. So.
Correct.
JehovahJireh.net. Minus the H.
Yep. And it's on automatic renewal. And so we basically have it forever and ever until we choose not to have it anymore. At which point we'll sell it to someone for $10 billion.
It's going to be worth a lot when we make it big. Okay, guys?
Yeah. Hey, here's the thing. As soon as we get Jehovah with no H to be the way that America spells it, we're good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. That's great. That's good. It's like Sarah with no H. Just a little bit sleeker, you know?
We got some audio submissions from listeners, and I'd like to share some of those.
So I Kissed Dating Goodbye came out in my sophomore or junior year of high school and was the book in my youth group. The two big takeaways that we had from it were that courtship was for the purpose of marriage and that, quote, giving your heart away was the most intense commitment that a person could make. The flip side, explicitly stated, was that if you dated more than one person ever, you'd be splitting your heart irreparably and that your eventual spouse, not too eventual, marriage was assumed to come pretty quickly, wouldn't ever be able to get your whole heart. There was a whole system in the youth group. Even though we were a cool youth group from a mainline church with a sand volleyball court, the youth pastor was in the matchmaking business. He'd push kids in his inner circle together and ice out any boyfriend brought to youth group from outside the church. Ooh, it wasn't until I just said that I realized that it was just boyfriends. Girlfriends were welcomed wholeheartedly. What? I guess us girls weren't allowed to choose for ourselves, but the boys were leaders and could be trusted.
Totally.
I'd started dating my first boyfriend shortly before the book hit the group, and he and I had the kind of crazy chemistry that happens in that first whirlwind high school romance. My youth pastor, of course, hated him. Mm-hmm. It was very clear from the first and probably only time he came with me that he was not welcome. I think the timing of all that maybe saved me from the worst of the impact of the book, actually. I wasn't in the inner circle, no matter how much I wanted to be, and I really had no interest in being matched up with any of the guys in it. So even though I felt guilty choosing to keep dating my boyfriend, it also felt like the right decision. The whole message still managed to mess me up, though. I went into that relationship with the expectation that this was permanent. We would date through college, get married after we graduated, and that was that. After all, I'd given him my heart, and you can't take that back, right? Of course, it ended. I was devastated, and I started dating basically the first guy who took me out in college. We were together for 2 years with absolutely zero chemistry because, again, you date, you marry. I finally figured out that we were going absolutely nowhere after 2 years of watching him play Super Smash Brothers in his living room, broke it off, and had a few weeks of flirting with the idea of getting back with high school boyfriend because of the heart thing. That actually gave me some closure in the end, though. After years of what ifs, that was obviously not going to be it. The thing is, I don't actually disagree now with the, quote, when you give away your heart, you can't take it back thing, even now. But I also don't think it's a bad thing. I love my husband and my family. I did end up getting married shortly after graduation, but that's another story. I love them with my whole heart, but it also has room for fondness and love for the memories I carry and for the lessons I learned from those early relationships. I don't have any regrets from the people I dated or from the people I didn't get to date because of, you know, all the very quick moving and all of those various pressures. But I do know now that my heart is plenty big enough for all kinds of love.
I love that so much. Good. It's such a beautiful way to kind of take what was taken from her and the ways that it harmed her. And now she's able to turn that around. And it is true. It's like when I had my kid,
I was worried that I would love my husband less or have less love to give, but it wasn't true. My heart grew.
You know, my hope and prayers for the generations to come that they don't have these hangups, and talk to your kids about sex. Like, it's been so interesting with my daughter, you know, asking about sex and just realizing, like, she asked me why, you know, people had sex recently, because she's just baffled by it, right? She actually turned 9 today. So she's like, you know, I remember she asked me, she's like, so I know that you and dad had sex when you made me. And I was like, And she asked, she was like, well, have you had sex again? Like any other times? And I was like,
cute.
Yes. And she was like a lot of times. And I was like, yes. And she just goes, ew, why? And I was like,
great question.
Because it feels good. I was like, because it feels good and it's fun. And, you know, of course she's 9. She's like horrified. She doesn't ever think. But I don't even think it was other than, like, of course in the Christian circles, there was the weird, like, it will be fun when you're married. You know, again, that weird switch of like, it's bad. And then it's going to be the best thing ever.
Day one.
Which is such a bizarre thing to try to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. Also, right? It's like heaven on earth will just happen. Like, how am I supposed to just happen?
It doesn't just happen. But also what's so funny is, like, it's almost like how they promise heaven after you suffer in life. And that's the same story of, like, you should suffer by not ever letting yourself feel any sexual feelings. And then when you get married, it's like heaven, right? But why don't we then go, wait a minute, this did not feel heavenly. Instead, we're like, that was my fault. There's something wrong with me. I should have been somehow better at letting this warped penis into my vagina. Like, that was my fault. But we still believe in heaven? Like, come on. There's this evidence that people are fucking lying. It's not true. Have sex when you want to with your friends.
I kind of can't believe.
Do what you want.
Yeah. I kind of can't believe we didn't get more submissions about people's wedding nights, because I have personally heard many horror stories of people, like, when you wait, like, it's terrible. You don't know what you're doing. It's uncomfortable. You're nervous.
And there's all the pressure, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Purity culture, y'all. It's appropriate for spooky season because it is dark and deeply fucked. Thank you for sticking through this episode that took a lot of twists and turns. There were highs and there were lows. And that's kind of the theme of us, I think. Like, we deal with really heavy things and there's some levity. And then there's also, like, some catharsis, some healing, and just some raw emotions that happen. Mm-hmm. So take care of yourself. Be good to yourself. Take some deep breaths. Like, this purity culture negatively affected so many people. And I am glad that we have each other to walk through this. I'm glad that we are out of it. I'm glad that we are healing, that we are reclaiming our sexuality. I'm going to put all this back in the crypt for a while. I'm not ready to, like, delve into. I'm like, okay, we ripped it open. We talked about these horror stories and I'm ready to, like, move on and think about, I'm ready to go, like, hang out with my vibrator or something.
That's a great antidote. Everybody, get off. All right. Go get off however you need to. You know, don't exploit anyone, but also just let yourself feel the human urge to feel. Yeah.
Go feel good. Whatever that means. Go like, give yourself some love in whatever way that works for you. You deserve it.
It is good to feel good.
Good to feel good.
It is good to feel good. Amen. Praise the Lord. Thank you all for listening. You can find us on the internet. We are on Instagram, TikTok. We have a Facebook group. We have a YouTube channel, and we are releasing some really great shit on our Patreon. We just did an episode on demons, and then we took a test to see if we are possessed by demons, and the test results are only available on Patreon. And very shortly, our very first episode of High Times with the Most High will be going up to Patreon only. So all you got to do is give us $5 a month, patreon.com/holyghosting. Or you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We're so thankful that you're here, ghosties, and we will see you next time. Happy Halloween. Don't let those ghosts get into your marriage bed.
Take those hauntings away. Oh my God.
I'm so sad for those people that were haunted by specters of their former lover.
I know. Now I'm worried.
Yeah, but Meg's ghost name was Barry. She was like, oh, Barry's
I loved that too. I'm so glad his name is Barry. That's great.
Barry the sex ghost.
That's sex right. Ghost Barry and Barbara, his new friend.
And him and sex Ed from
Justin Bob. Yeah, Ed from Sex Ed. I love listeners.